Hi, my name is Clay Toomey, and I am an ambassador for the Enneagram Prison Project. As we approach our 10th anniversary, we thought it'd be fun to sit down and have a chat with all the people who have had an impact with EPP over the years and have made it what it is today. Now today, I'm going to be talking with two of my friends who also happen to be fellow ambassadors of the project, Victor Soto and Alex Senegal. First of all, like tell people who don't know, what does OG actually stand for and what does it mean outside of EPP?
Well, I mean, it's the original gangsters, you know what I mean? It's somebody who's, it doesn't matter if you're gang banging or if you're pimping, whatever it is that you're doing that you're not supposed to be doing, right? If you've been around in the game for a long time and you actually survived it, you are considered an OG. Then they got the double OG and the triple OG, which means you, when you get older, it gets, you know, you add another zero. But yeah, it's just original gangster, man. And, you know, it just signifies, you know, either status or, you know, how long you've been in the game.
Yeah.
You know, how people recognize you and respect, you know, especially from the youngsters. You know? I mean, if the youngsters respect the older, then they'll call them OGs and stuff like that. But outside of, like, when I hear it like being used as, you know, a term for us and that have been around a while for EPP, it's just, I mean, I shrug it off now and I think it's funny because the way that I hear it now, it's like, damn, I'm old.
Right.
That's how I hear it when they talk about it in EPP. I'm like, damn, I've been around a minute.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people stick around, man. It's a shame.
Yeah, I wish we had actual numbers, man. Like, I wish we knew for every X amount of people that came on the front end, you know, this amount of people did not stay around or whatever. Like, I don't know. I think it's like we get really caught up in the conversation of success that we kind of sometimes forget about. Like, there's people who just ain't made it, man. They just, for whatever reason. And sometimes it's less extreme than others. Sometimes it's just, they just kind of disappeared and they're like healthy and doing great in their own life. They just don't have anything to do with us, you know? So it's not like they have to or whatever, but I don't know if you know this, but there's some people who are actually like uncomfortable saying like OG, cause it's like a gang related term and it makes it almost like it's a label put on us that we shouldn't have. And I don't know. I think it's kind of, I mean, it is what it is. Like, that's a term that we just use in this, like, where we come from. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily mean, like, actual gangster or whatever. That's just where the phrase came from. Like, OG, old school, like, all these terms.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, regardless if people aren't comfortable using it, it's because they're still working on something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they still got something that doesn't sit right with them. You know, it doesn't. And I don't know, when I use it or I say it because I'm talking to somebody who's older than me, somebody who's been around a lot longer, you know what I mean? Just like some of my dad's friends, you know what I mean? They're OGs.
Yep.
And they're just senior citizens, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, so yeah, basically it's another way of saying grandpa.
Pretty much.
Pawpaw, peepaw, papaw.
That's pretty much, when, you know, when somebody calls me an OG in the Enneagram world, I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know, man. It actually makes me feel good to hear that, though, from, like, you know, Susan and everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, because to me, it signifies something. I represent something. I've been around something so long that, you know, regardless of what my interactions is with it, it's like I'm still being recognized as, you know, one of the older guys or older generations, or OGs of, you know, the Enneagram Prison Project. It makes me feel good because I haven't been part of something like this for so long, for a long time. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah. Speaking of OG, the man himself, Alex, you're muted, by the way. I accidentally clicked the mute button. There you go. OG himself.
No, Alex would be considered the almost, he'd be the double OG, close to a triple OG as soon as he's close, but he's a double OG.
What's up, Alex?
What's going on, fellas? Man.
Good to hear you.
Another day in paradise.
Man, I had to run a 100-yard dash to get here.
Right, now I'm gonna go ahead and call BS because you don't sound out of breath, and I'm gonna have to see you run 100 yards.
Yeah, my blood pressure is like off the chart. You know, I'm a little bit in shape though, Clay, you know.
Hey, I
Yeah, I
mean,
heard
I
that.
tell you what,
Hey,
next.
listen, you can your arms might be in shape for picking up all them chicken wings or something.
Yeah, you know, man. That's you know, 6 ounce curls, they keep me.
Next time we're all in the same like state, we'll go run a couple miles and see if we can have this calm, relaxed, normal breathing conversation after
Okay. Well, first of all, make sure you got the paramedic standing by.
that.
Alex,
He's doing it.
we're just talking about like being what they call like the OGs of the ambassadors or of EPP or whatever, and like the term itself, like OG, and what it means like outside of EPP or whatever, what it means inside of EPP. Like when you hear that phrase, like when you get called an OG, like what does that mean to you?
Original, authentic, standard setter, old,
Old.
been around, the beginning, you know, all those acronyms come into play.
What year did y'all come in to the fold? Like how do y'all remember the actual year that you became a part of EPP?
2014.
It was January.
Yeah, 2014.
The same, like at the exact the same same time?
I think I was. I don't know if I was one class ahead of Alex or we start at the same time.
No, we
No, I
both
was.
came in that same day. I came late.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've actually heard that story about you being late.
Yeah, I sat outside and I kept on tripping whether to go in there or not. Tripping off the symbol. You know, I was convinced it was a cult. And my gut kept on saying, nope, go in there. This is for you. Go in there. This is for you.
Well, you know, even back then, you know, the way you looked at it, you know, regardless if you were in county jail or prison, you know what I mean? Even if you haven't really changed your life fully, you know, you still struggle with how people are going to view you. You know what I mean? Rather, how people that you kick it with or that you run with in there, how they're going to see you, because not a lot of people want you to change your life. You know what I mean?
Because we was in, even with the RCP, everybody knew that. Everybody knew only 1% of the individuals in there was sincere about changing their life. Everybody else is just in there just to be in there. And so that's where we were being recruited from. But hey, I tell you, after a couple classes with EPP, things started really changing for I know for myself and for Vic. Matter of fact, Vic motivated me to stay in the book because every time I looked over there at him, he was reading the dang on book.
What's like the first what's the first thing that you notice like, all right, this is not only is it like legit, but this is like affecting me in a positive direction. Like when you think about the earliest days in those first like EPP classes, was it like a gradual just kind of come around kind of thing, or was there like a moment? I know for me it was when I started reading about the types and I realized like, oh, this is legit, by the way. This is like actually for real. And I remember thinking like I was on the edge of learning something about myself that was gonna make a big difference. Did either of y'all have that moment
Well,
as well?
I don't know if it was from the reading. I think it was more or less from the interaction between Susan and the way that she viewed us and the way that she actually talked to me as a human being. That right there sparked the notation in my head that there, holy shit, that there's hope. You know what I mean? That somebody is actually here for me and not because they want to collect a paycheck. You know what I mean? They were sincere about what they were trying to teach. And then going back to the book and actually reading the book, and then it's showing me a little bit more about myself. But I mean, in the classroom is where it hit me the most. and being able to see other men like follow suit because they saw it too. Like, and that to me, that's really powerful. Somebody can come and teach you something, and you have one individual move, and then the next individual move, and then everybody started moving the same direction. That's powerful.
Yeah,
I remember distinctly when the aha moment came to me, and when I was like, okay, there's something to this thing. Susan Herrick, she came, she was one of the guests that came inside to teach us, and she's a nine. And at this point in time, I'm really trying to wrap my mind around how this thing works, because I'm trying to figure it out before I learn it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally. It does, really.
And so she asked me this question, man, and it almost brought me to tears. She asked me, what do I need? And I could not answer that question because I had not a clue what Alex needed, because Alex never paid attention to herself. And that's when I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, and it blew me away to the point where I said, I would never, ever not be able to answer that question again. And the only way that can happen is that I pay attention to me and I start to know me, that I start to be important to me. And that's when this whole, the teaching started making sense, the purpose and just the whole ground level. And the readings even started making sense, and it was real. Yeah. It was just so real. There I am on paper, black and white. That's me. That's what I do. That's an unhealthy Alex right there. That's the habitual Alex right there. And I seen it. And once I seen it, I was able to start making the adjustments.
So we're like 7+ years down the road from that conversation. And you, oh, that's powerful to me, man. When you say I'll never be in a position to not be able to answer that question again. You articulated it way better than I repeated it, but basically you're saying I'll never be in a position where I don't know the answer to that again. So you could answer it now, what do you need? But I'm wondering, like, and in retrospect, what did at that point, what was the answer to the question? Even if you didn't know it at that time, what did Alex need at that point? You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah. At that point, Alex needed connection. Alex needed understanding. Alex needed self-forgiveness. Back then, yeah, I needed self-forgiveness. I needed to get rid of that guilt and shame that I was carrying, the unworthiness, the less than. I couldn't for the life of me figure out how can I do so good for so long and then just go just to the left like I never did good to. Never did good.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I had to really start honoring who Alex is, what Alex is, who and what Alex is. Exactly. I had to honor that. I had to get to a point of acceptance of that.
That's pretty powerful, man. I think we all, I mean, and I don't know, Vic, how much you relate to that. You two share types on the Enneagram, and I mean we all have a little bit of everything, but you know, you relate to somebody more specifically, or more, I don't know, generally, I guess, when you're in the same type. So I, being a five, I can relate to that just because I'm human like you, or at least that's the rumor, and but it's different for me. Like I didn't always experience it that way, so I don't know if Vic feels that the same or not.
Well, I mean, for me, I don't. Yeah, I didn't know how to answer that question either, because I didn't know what it was like to have. I didn't know what it was like to have like support, guidance, and you know, wisdom, teachings by people that. Authentically cared about you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I didn't know how to answer that question. I didn't know what I needed. I mean, in the back of my mind, I was like, damn, why can't I get the right people in my life? Or why can't I get the right support that I need to get the fuck out of here?
Right.
You know, because I always wanted to, I didn't want to do this for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? I didn't want to do time for the rest of my life. I didn't want to hang around these my homies. I didn't want to hang around nobody for the rest of my life. And I just couldn't figure out how to take that step in the right direction. And, you know, it wasn't until the Enneagram Prison Project showed up, they gave me that little push that I needed. You know what I mean? And from then on, it's just been life changing. You know, like you say, a little white lady with a poster, she did something for me that she did something for me like nobody else has ever done for me. She showed up for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll never forget that in the film. You know, I even tell Susan over and over again, and I'll tell anybody this over and over again, even though she doesn't want to hear it. Like, that lady, she saved my life.
Yeah.
Like, I know I did the work, but she showed up. She saved my life. She gave me that opportunity to take that step into the unknown and figure life out. And, yeah.
So,
you know, brother, she wants to accept it, and I know it's hard for her to accept it, but she believed in every last one of us until we were able to believe in ourselves.
Yeah.
That's how I say it. And I know she don't want to accept it, but that's the truth.
Yeah. We're in 2021 now. This journey for both of you begins 7+ years ago, and then, you know, a little bit before that for me. But like, where does it, where, like, if EPP doesn't come along, or if you never met Susan, or if you never learned about the Enneagram, you know, like, what does 2021 look like for you if 2014 did not happen the way it did?
A 4x6 cell.
Yeah.
Still doing the same old shit, just trying to do it differently and trying to get away with being a criminal. You know what I mean? Drug dealer, gangbanger. You know, and that's just the harsh reality for me. Yeah. And you know, people don't want to really hear that. You know what I mean? But I know what reality is for me. If 2014 didn't happen, if the Enneagram Prison Project didn't happen, if Susan didn't show up that day, you know, my life would be 100% different. I wouldn't have everything I have today. I wouldn't have the understanding of life and what steps to take. Yeah, I'd be back in prison.
Yeah, I don't know where I would have been. I know it wouldn't have been here, like in a good place, you know? I mean, it's like I was searching so hard for so long for something, and I just got just straight up lucky. And some will call it divine intervention, some will call it other things, and the phrase that I use is just, I was just extremely fortunate, you know, where, you know, opportunity met me at the right point, and I was ready for it. And, you know, I don't know where I'd be. I met Susan January of 2011, so it's over 10 years ago that I met her, and I cannot imagine a decade, not just without like the personal connections that I've made with EPP, like the personal relationships that I've formed, but also just like the general understanding of, oh, hey, this is where my brain is wrong, and this is where my head doesn't work right, you know, like that tool itself. And we don't have to talk about the Enneagram the whole time, because there are other stuff I want to talk about. But like, just generally speaking, like I had no idea of how to go through life in a healthy manner. I didn't even know how to identify when I was healthy or unhealthy. So like, for me, like all these little basic, you know, things in life that people take for granted because it's easy for them. Like for me, waking up and making good decisions it takes effort. You know what I mean? Like it's...
You say it takes effort, man. That takes some hard work, right?
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. And maybe I'm understating a little bit by saying it takes effort, but it's not easy for me, at least. I can't speak for anybody.
It's not.
And I don't have that thing in my brain, you know. And I say this all the time, dude. Like, I'm not a different person. I just make different choices, and I still have the same brain. And when I wake up every day, I still have I don't have that thing that tells me to make decisions based on morals. And it's not that I'm an immoral person. You know, I might lean a little towards amoral, which I don't believe I do, but I'm not immoral. I just think that I don't always care about what's right or wrong. you know, I just do things that I think will be fun or will be good or will be interesting or whatever. Like this conversation, there was no consideration about, is this a good idea or a bad idea? It's just like, I want to do it. I want to do it. And now I'm doing it. Right.
Yeah.
So having the understanding of type and knowing what it means to be, in my case, a type five, and how that can work very well sometimes and how it could work against me sometimes. It can make life easy. It can make life hard. Like knowing more about that has just made life easier for me. If I'm in the line at the grocery store and somebody cuts in front of me, I can immediately address what I'm feeling in that moment and how to react in a healthy manner. So, and I know, to me, that's where the biggest like impact shows up, is where I can do all these little micro decisions in real time, and it makes life, I'll just say, easier and better and all that other stuff. So
yeah, it definitely helps. I mean, you know, I still struggle with, you know, because the bald-headed tattoos, tall my skin, living in like Beverly Hills in Fiji, Arizona, you know, I still struggle with, you know, being around certain people because I still feel like they're judging me or they're scared of me, you know, so I still feel that. But it, like you, it gives me the opportunity to make that right choice or think things through before I react, because I know if I just react without thinking things through, then I guess I'm going to have to build myself up. And I don't want to do that anymore. Like, I don't want to break the law, and I may sound like a little pansy if I say this, but
I know what word you're about to say, by the way. Speaking of real time editing, I know what you.
I mean, fuck, I won't even jaywalk right now, dude. You know what I mean? That's how much, like, fuck, dude, I want to obey the law. Like, dude, I'm a square bear now. Like, what the fuck? But, you know, and, you know, I joke about that, but I appreciate that about myself now. And I appreciate that I can actually see that in myself, because before I wouldn't be able to appreciate that. I would do the dumbest shit in the world, you know what I mean? Because I wanted to either show off or I was, you know, kicking around the wrong people and just, you know, do what I do.
You bring up an interesting point, because you talk about, you know, like the visual of who we are and what we look like, that is what it is. You know, like we're still the same humans in the same body. You still got the tats. We still look a certain way. And we all look very differently, even though people can't see us right now. Like we're not the same race. Y'all are closer in body size to each other than me, you know, but I'm just kidding. But like, I'm getting there. I'm working on it. But like, if the three of us, let's be honest, if the three of us are walking down the street, like just some random, you know, street in America, I don't think the general response from the neighborhood would be like, oh wow, I'm happy to see these guys. They look like they're up to something good.
You know, right.
Like, I hope they come talk to me. Like it would be the opposite, right?
But it probably would be. You know, answering that question for me, I was thinking, where would I be? I would probably be one of them guys that I would be a jailhouse preacher, man.
Yeah.
I would honestly be a jailhouse. I would not be a preacher preaching in a sanctuary in the community. I would not be the preacher that makes a difference in the community. I would be one of the guys that know the word of God but can't do right.
Yeah.
I would be pastor do wrong. And like I love how you say, you know, you know, I got to work at doing good, because doing wrong is just, you know, it's not second nature for me. I have to work to do it, but without the self-awareness, without making the choice to do what is right. For me, I embrace, and this is one of the biggest things the Enneagram has really helped me with, is to really come to the acceptance of who I am and my purpose in life, you know? And that for me is huge. And so I bring in the behavior to be in line with that, but I have to work at it. It's not a gimme.
Yeah.
It's not a gimme. And I'm like you, Vic, you know, I sit here and I look at it and I laugh at it, and I laugh at real time situations at how, man, right now I had the thought of just busting this dude upside the head, but yet I'm not gonna do that, because, you know.
Right.
And then, so, you know, to do right, you know, and I laugh at it, you know, the jaywalking stuff. I've done that too, you know, wanting to jaywalk, but won't jaywalk. And people be like, huh, we can just run right here. I said, no, we got to wait to the light.
Dude.
You know, so yeah, but these are just conscious decisions that I become aware of. These are really the consciousness, bringing unconsciousness to consciousness is the biggest thing I've gained, man. And it's been so helpful for me.
Man, y'all are in this, hearing jaywalking and that analogy or whatever just now made me think of Cincinnati. I don't know why this image just popped in my head.
I see it.
Yeah,
like we're walking, we're at the conference there, and there's like, I don't know what, a dozen or maybe 18 people of, we're walking down the sidewalk, gonna go eat real quick for our lunch break or whatever.
Yeah.
And we're at the corner and there's no cars, like there's no traffic, and a few of the people they're just like, all right, let's just keep going. And then a few of us are like, and they're like, well, no, it's no car. And like, the idea, and it wasn't like this was like a formal, like proper conversation, but basically in the matter of a few seconds, what happened was one group saying, oh, it's not that big a deal. And another group saying, hey, fuck that, not big deal, because I'm not going. I'm staying right here and I'm waiting for the light to turn green. And those are actually the moments for me where I just, like, I personally don't care about, like, to me, laws are they're as important as you make them. So like, to me, I don't personally feel like restricted by a light flashing a certain color, but I also recognize that, like, hey, this group is not cool with it. So I don't know. It's funny, in that moment you have two groups of people, those of us who've done time and those of us who haven't. And it's just funny to see how, I don't know, how different, I don't know. There's no like point to the story. I'm just remembering this. And as you're saying, talking about jaywalking, and by the way, some of my favorite pictures ever are from that. So I don't know who was walking with a camera, but somebody took a picture of us.
This brings up a good thing. So my fiance, right? My fiance is Italian. So she's a white girl. Okay. And I joke around, like, you know, she asked me to go get her neighbor's mail. I said, fuck no, I'm not gonna go.
Not
get
a
mail,
chance, but... dude. I wouldn't get my dad's mail. What are you talking about?
I go because a motherfucker's gonna go to jail around here for some stupid shit.
And that's federal. You talking about the mail?
Yeah, yeah. And she's like, she goes, why are you? She goes, that's not gonna happen. I said, you have no idea what's on my record. I said, and you have no idea what people are gonna do to me. And like, case in point, right? So we have a Safeway down the street. And nothing really happens up here, right? The crime rate where I live is super low. But 2 months ago, this Hispanic dude was at the Safeway down there, and he was going to steal someone's car, and the cop shot him. They killed him in the Safeway parking lot. And, you know, and I looked at my lady, and I told her, I was like, look, now do you see? I said, I may joke about it. I said, but it's real for me.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter where I'm at. Because I live around a bunch of, you know, white people, and there's not a lot of Mexicans where I'm at. And I don't mean to make it sound like, you know, a racist thing or anything like that, but that's just what it is, right? So like I told her, I may joke about it a lot because I have to joke about it to get me through it. I go, but that's real life shit for me.
Yeah.
You know, so it's tough. That's for sure.
You know, it's the phrase that, you know, we can't afford to forget where we came from. We can't afford to forget the history as we move forward into the future, because the possibilities of what would happen to someone else, it's a reality for us. This, it's not a, that might happen. It's, this will happen.
Yeah.
That's how I approach it. Each and every day, I'll be like, you know what? If I do this, if I make this choice, this is what's going to happen, and which helps me make the right choice.
Yeah.
Because if I put a choice in there that it might, well, that leaves too big of a gap for me to do, and so I can't even afford that. So and the reality is, it may not happen to everybody else, but this is what's going to happen to me, based on history.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I use it. you know, like I understand what Big said, you know, the way you may project it to other people or explain it to other people in a joking manner, but inside, in my heart, in my mind, it's a reality.
So
that most people just wouldn't accept or don't understand.
So the flip side of that idea of walking down the street and people like immediately having an opinion of you based on how you look, or like not wanting to get the mail because of this or that, or you see something on the news and it makes you think, hey, that's that could have been like me or whatever. Like the flip side of that is in the Enneagram world, like for example, at that conference, you know, in Cincinnati that I was talking about, people know, okay, let's just say, call it how it is. Like as an EPP ambassador, people know who you are in the Enneagram world, yeah. Right? And you would already stick out. And I say you, but I mean we, but I'm just saying you because that's how I'm talking. But like you stick out in that room. Like there's a certain flavor of human that's going to show up to the Enneagram conferences. And let's be honest, we're not that flavor. Like it's just. We don't look like everybody else or talk like everybody else or live like it, you know. So, but the funny thing is that we have the opposite experience if in those conferences, because like people want to talk to us. Like people will leave their conversation if they see you walking by just so they can say hi and talk to you, you know, one-on-one. And I don't know how it feels for you guys, but for me, it took some getting used to, because it was just a very uncomfortable place for me to be, but I got used to it real quick, and now I actually love it. I so enjoy being a person that people just want to come ask questions to or talk to or say nice things to. It's like you're still being judged, you know, based on something that they think rather than something that they know, but it's for like good reasons. It's like they immediately attach us to EPP and they just want to come talk to us because of who we are and what we've done. And I think it's awesome. I don't know what's the experience like for you guys when you get good treatment from people who've never talked to you or met you.
It's
I don't even know if I'm phrasing the question right, but you know what I'm saying, right?
I totally get it. It's, you know, so at first I was like, you know, I felt like you did, like it was an uncomfortable feeling because I'm not used to the attention, you know, and the attention that I got were flashing red lights and handcuffs.
Yeah.
So when you got like, yeah, you know, we're not that same flavor as everybody else, but when you have all these people that are willing to come up and they want to hear what you have to say because they do see the work that you've done and the great things that you're doing, or they what they consider great and awesome is, I don't really look at myself really doing nothing awesome except I changed my life. I went from being, you know, a gangbanger, drug dealer / whatever you want to call it, to just being responsible for my life and making the right decisions. And I actually like those conversations now. I like being able to shed light and understanding in people's, you know, and give people a better understanding of a different lifestyle, you know, and the fires that I had to walk through just to get to where I'm at today. And whether it's going to help them with family, whether it's going to help them with somebody that they know. I mean, it does, literally. If I can give somebody some word of advice and they actually attach to that, it makes me feel great.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I like all the pictures, you know, all the hugs and everything else. But, right. You know, it's just good conversation, and I like it.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, it's for me, man, it can still get a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the time I remember when we were in Utah, how we was like, man, I think I need to go outside.
Yeah.
Because it can still get overwhelming to me, but I do embrace it today. Today I can embrace it, and I'm able to deal with it a lot longer. At first I was just tolerating because I didn't like the attention. I hated the attention.
Yeah.
And I was afraid of, I didn't have the right answers to any questions. All that stuff came up for me. But today, man, today, you know, I have to embrace it because it is who I am.
Yeah.
Because that's who I am, I represent it. Because, you know, my thoughts on being an ambassador and the standard of being an ambassador, it goes through the roof. And it goes through the roof because that's how I believe that we should represent it. So I embrace it, man. I do. You know, I can't say I love it, but I'm learning to.
And one of my favorite conversations to have with like new ambassadors who are attending their first like conference is I love to tell them like we're already there, we're at the hotel, we haven't done anything on panel yet or whatever, and like people know us because we've been around for a few years, like they've met us before, they see us, they recognize us, but the new ambassadors don't have that yet. And one of my favorite things to tell them is like, hey, enjoy this last couple hours of nobody knowing who you are, because that shit's about to change big time. And
yeah.
Tomorrow, you're not going to be able to go. Like, you think I'm exaggerating, but you're not going to be able to go to the bathroom without somebody stopping you and then somebody else stopping you after that and after that and after that. And I embrace it. I love it now. I also understand the important, like you said, when we were in Utah, there's that moment where it's like, all right, I need a break, I gotta go
break.
and that's nothing against anybody, it's that no. Is just a I don't mean to pat ourselves on the back, but that's just a matter of maturity or a status of health or what, however you want to phrase that, that's showing that, you know, it goes back to what you talked about earlier, like what do you need? And that can be for big things, it could be for little things, and in that moment the answer is I need some fresh air. I need to breathe some air that nobody else is breathing right now. I need to go not answer questions. I need to go just look at the sky and just kind of like recalibrate myself, you know? So, and it doesn't mean that I don't want to be here. It just means, dude, when your phone gets low, you got to plug it in. And that's all there is to it. That's just an objective situation where you have the solution. So, I don't know. I love talking to new ambassadors about that and saying like, hey, enjoy this because this is over tomorrow, or this is over, you know, as soon as we do the panel. But Alex, you got to go in 10 minutes, right, Alex?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Is it short of 10 minutes or do you have more than 10 minutes?
I got a little more right now. Okay. I think my 1 o'clock may be running a little late.
Okay. And Vic, are you good to go? I have to leave at 15. I have to leave at 5 minutes past the hour, like no matter what. Like if you're mid sentence, it'll be interrupted by me saying bye.
And, I got
like,
that. Time.
Okay, but I do want to ask like the one question that I think is really worth talking about in the like we're talking about EPP, we're talking about the 10-year anniversary next year, the 9-year anniversary today. Like there's a lot of stuff that's gone down, not only as individuals, you know, as we are, but also just the organization as a whole. But like, how do you feel? Like, I know I asked about like, where would you be without EPP, but like, even beyond that, how does it feel seeing yourself? Like, if you can just kind of take a step back and see who you are today, like, do you have any, like observations of yourself? As far as you're living your life the way that you're living it today, is it a matter of like pride, accomplishment, or are there still things to work on? Like, how do you see yourself as far as how you're living today, and just what are your thoughts around that?
Go ahead, Alex.
Okay, thank you. I sit and the fact. You know, being on the board and being in that board meeting, I remember at first I sat there like, what the hell am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what they talking about. I don't have nothing to say, nothing to contribute. Why am I here? And then for the fact to realize and getting to a place within myself of how I make a difference and how I am a voice. I'm a voice for the ambassadors at this time. I'm a voice for EPP. I'm a voice and needs to give input in how I see things, because what I have to say is important, but I had to work to get there. I had to continue to work on myself. I'm in the nine prisoners, one key. Matter of fact, got a class tomorrow night. The reason I took that because I want to continue to grow. I believe EPP is life-changing. It's a great tool, and it's just like everything else. You have to continue to do the work. It's something that we must continue to acknowledge self. And so I just totally continue to incorporate that, you know, along with my spiritual growth, and what EPP helps me. It really helps me accept my true identity and who I am. And I think I may have got it off course of the question.
Not at all.
But it really is the continuation of growth. I personally believe that if we as ambassadors don't keep growing into our new life, we're going to keep on giving testimonies about our old way of how we was 7-10 years ago.
There's a lot of wisdom in that sentence right there.
Yeah. So, yeah, just to keep growing, man. Just to keep growing.
That's what's up.
Man. So, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm going to keep it real. You know what I'm saying? Like, always. There's, you know, I still struggle with things in life. You know, things, just because life is good doesn't mean I don't struggle. You know, knowing about the Enneagram and continuing to do the work, it walks me through those troubled times. You know, there's been 4 or 5 times where I was ready to have that fucking moment and just go back to prison. Because, you know, at certain times in life, even doing good, I felt like a fucking failure. But I don't know, man. You know, I sit back and I you know, look on Facebook, or I see posts, and I see people that I'm associated with and how good that they're still doing. And it gives me that motivation to keep going. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I got a woman that is interested in the Enneagram because I'm interested in the Enneagram, and she wants to learn about it, which makes me feel good that somebody in my life wants to do something because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not because, you know, and I've never had that before. So it's a different feeling, you know what I mean? But for me, it's like I constantly have to work. I constantly have to reach out for advice and guidance because I'm constantly battling myself on whether I'm good enough or I can go any further. And I don't think that I would be able to do that if I stopped being interested, if I stopped, you know, associating myself with the Enneagram Prison Project. And that's my frustration, is because I wish I could do more. I wish I could be more involved, but I can't because of my schedule, and I live in Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, when I first got out, man, it was balls to the walls, man, feet to the ground, you know, and I hit everything that Enneagram Prison Project had, and I was involved in everything they had going on. It gets lonely, man. Like, I don't know if anybody can understand what I mean by lonely. It's not like I feel, I'm not sad about it. It's just
right.
Sometimes I feel lonely because I'm out here, you know what I mean? I had all my people in California, and it's like,
yeah.
You know, it gets hard at times, and sometimes I get resentful, and sometimes it makes me sad. But you know, that one phone call or that one connection with somebody uplifts me and lets me know that, hey, I'm still here for you. You're not alone.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me on this track, man. That's what keeps me associated with the Enneagram Christian Project. That's what keeps me being an ambassador.
People,
I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead, man.
I was just gonna say, man, I feel the same thing. I'm out in Texas, and I envy people who are all out there in the same area and can drive to each other's houses out in California. I don't think people sometimes understand the value of, or realize the value of, just a little like text message, like, "Hey, man, what's up? Thinking about you." Like,
yeah, it goes a long way, because that one text message or that one phone call might actually reach you at the right time.
At the time, I was going to say, the timing of it is always like, I've been at work, man, and just been in a bad mood, not because of work, but just because it just, that's where I was, and I was doing my thing, and and just kind of pissed off and get a text message from somebody saying, hey man, what's up, how you doing, how you feeling, just thinking about you. And it changes everything. The day is just different from that point forward. Because it's almost like getting slapped, like in the back of the head, like, hey man, get your shit together. It ain't that bad. Like, come on, man. It's not that bad. And sometimes I need you to just get slapped sometimes. It's not a slap. It's a loving, like friendly, you know, yeah, almost innocuous text message.
Acknowledgement that you matter. Well, I can share this with the both of you. Because every time, not just sometimes, not most of the time, but every time that there's a meeting with the ambassadors and the two of y'all not there, I feel like the big old void. It's a big void. Yeah. Because the two of y'all do matter. If y'all don't matter to nobody else, y'all matter to me. But I know for a fact how much the two of y'all matter, especially to the foundation of EPP. The two of y'all matter so much to the foundation of the ambassadors that it's unreal. And I hear y'all. I hear you because, you know, y'all, it seems like you're both of y'all on an island somewhere. But man, don't think for one minute that you're not missed. I'm always thinking about you. I'm always saying, well, where's Clay? Where's Vic? What's going on? And I'm constantly bringing your names up because, it's the foundation, man. And there's a time I remember the first IEA conference right there in Burlingame. Who was driving? Clay, you was driving the van. Vic, yeah, you was riding in front.
Yeah. I was driving.
No, you was driving.
Yeah, it's the only time I let him drive too. But from that point forward, that was a wrap. I'm driving or I'm walking.
That's where it started at. And then the two of y'all, and then and I'm like, Clay, he's straight from Texas, and I'm like listening. I'm like, this boy from Texas, and he a true Texan, whatever I know about a Texan, right? but Clay to me is the Texan, right? That's my view of a Texan.
It's accurate.
and I remember that trip down the highway right there, and that was a great bonding moment that always stick. It's inside of me because the two of y'all, we that just that connection that makes. And I often say to myself, I get all wrapped up with my job and with ministry and all this stuff like that. Then sometimes there's times when I'm just driving in the car and I'm saying to myself right now, those are the times when I can probably call one of you, not both of you,
yeah,
So, and I will be doing that because, man, the two of y'all don't think for one minute that you're not, in my heart and in my mind. And it's just a big void when the two of y'all are not around. It's a big void, not a little chasm. It's a big void.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, it's good talking to y'all, man.
Hey, same here. Good talking to y'all, man. I love y'all, man. Y'all stay strong.
Love y'all too, man.
Love you guys too, man. Talk to you guys later.
See you, man.
Right, take care.
For more information about EPP, please visit EnneagramPrisonProject.org. We appreciate your time and attention today. Stay tuned for future episodes, which you can expect on the 12th of every month, as we continue to tell the story of Enneagram Prison Project.